Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the union label.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Welcome, everyone, to the Alan Nathan Show, the headquarters in moderation, where we want the Republicans out of our bedrooms, the Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor with Breitbart News, sitting in for Alan today. Please visit our website at alannathan.com for our podcasts and our showtimes. Well, you know, we talk about being the home of militant moderation over here, but we're not really all that militant. We're not marching around and attacking anybody. And it's kind of a joke, you know, inherently. How could a moderate be militant by definition? You know, you're not really given to that sort of behavior. But the left in this country is increasingly militant, and it's getting out of hand. It's getting way out of hand. And the people who are doing this, who are encouraging violence, who are in many cases elected politicians of the Democrat Party, they know what they're doing. They're trying to set up a bloodbath. They're doing it on purpose. They think it's the only way they can retain power, and they're counting on their media pals to not hold them accountable for what they say. So when the you-know-what hits the fan, they're going to just be running around saying, oh, we didn't tell anybody to shoot those ICE agents. No, we just called them all Nazis, but we didn't say to shoot them. I mean, what do you do to Nazis? You shoot them. So, I mean, this is getting ridiculously out of control, and it's time for organized action by the government against these terrorist left-wing groups. And I suspect that is happening. They don't need me to tell them to get busy here. I am a little surprised that there hasn't been anything public stated about efforts to sic the FBI on Antifa and these other violent left-wing terrorist groups. But maybe that's because, I hope that's because, they're working on it. And you don't talk about that sort of thing in public while you're working on it. You talk about it when you have charges to bring, when you have arrests. But you don't discuss first rule of FBI club, is that you don't talk about FBI club. You don't talk about what you're doing behind the scenes. But on the 4th of July, we had this organized ambush of ICE agents, of immigration agents. And this was straight up a terrorist attack. It was a terrorist attack perpetrated by the left-wing group known as Antifa. And they were organized. They were armed. They had tactical gear. They used tactics, terrorist tactics, to lure ICE agents out of their facility so that they could open fire on them. They wound up in a gun battle with the police. And now 10 members of this terror cell, which are all pasty white lefty types in this case, are facing attempted murder charges. A couple of them probably never going to get out of jail again, hopefully. This is serious. This is very serious. And this is not a lone kook. This is not like the Bernie Sanders supporters that tried to murder the entire Republican caucus at a baseball camp. Remember that baseball game? We don't talk about it. It dropped out of the news 1 minute after it happened, and the media never wants to ever talk about it again. But some deranged Bernie Sanders supporter tried to kill the entire Republican caucus at a baseball game a few years ago. That was a real thing that happened. And when people said, well, that seems bad, the response was, it's a lone kook. He has nothing to do with Bernie Sanders or his rhetoric. He's just a nut. And don't get mad at him. Those were, of course, the same people that tried to blame every conservative and Republican under the sun for the attempted shooting of Gabby Giffords in Tucson, Arizona. So, of course, it's a game. It's a game. Blaming people for rhetoric inspiring violence is not a logical or consistent argument. It's a game. If you want to impugn your opponents, you say, hey, you're a rhetoric, you're anti-government rhetoric, shooter. And if you remember Tucson, the attempts to link that violence to mainstream conservative rhetoric were increasingly deranged. I mean, the entire left lost its mind in a matter of hours. And by the day after the shooting, they were just lunatics. They were gibbering on the airwaves. Oh, it's Rush Limbaugh caused this guy to pull the trigger. Yeah, because Rush Limbaugh's out there saying big government's bad. And that directly inspired this guy to go shoot Gabby Giffords. And that's not what happened. You know, as it turned out, the guy had never heard a Rush Limbaugh broadcast and had no idea. But that's how crazy they went back then because they sniffed an opportunity to exploit a tragedy for political gain. Well, now here we are in the year of our Lord 2025, and you have Democrats acting like immigration agents, I mean, explicitly calling them Nazis. The alligator Alcatraz out there in the Everglades, the new camp for deported migrants, is explicitly likened to Auschwitz. It's just like a Nazi concentration camp. These Democrats are just off the chain with their rhetoric. And you have people like Karen Bass, the comprehensively useless mayor of Los Angeles, who spends all of her time now going down to immigration busts and getting in their way and yelling that she's going to protect Angelenos from immigration agents. A newsflash, Mayor Bass, they're not Angelenos. They're illegal aliens. They're not your constituents. But that's the rub. The Democrat Party has decided that illegal immigration is their hill to die on for a variety of reasons. And more to the point, they're going to make you die on that hill. They're increasingly inspiring their followers to organize violence, not just a lone kook here and there, not just a lone oddball, but organized groups of these Antifa terror cells are now taking violent action against immigration forces. And if you're lucky, it's just vandalism. Right after the 4th of July ambush on ICE agents, another group of anti-ICE activists in Los Angeles tried planting tire spikes behind the ICE agents' police cars, the immigration enforcement vehicles. They put tire spikes down to blow their tires, and they got arrested for trying to do that. That's serious stuff. I mean, that's more than just vandalism. People get hurt and killed if their tires blow, rolling over tire spikes, and I'm sure they're going to be charged appropriately after being arrested. But the Democrats have fabricated this narrative that immigration enforcement is somehow monstrously evil. And it's not. It's law enforcement. The immigration laws of our country are clear. The people breaking them know they're breaking. This is another thing about the open borders lunatics that always drives me crazy. They act like these illegal aliens tripped on a rock and fell across the border and suddenly found themselves helplessly stranded in the United States. No, these people pay organized crime to smuggle them across the border. They know exactly what they're doing. They know we have laws and they know they're breaking them. And the left has decided on its own power, on its own authoritarian will, that those laws don't really count. I mean, they're on the books, but we're just going to ignore them. And therefore, they think any attempt to enforce those laws is inherently evil, outrageous, and over the top. And, you know, if you're going to try to clean up a mess like the one Joe Biden's handlers made, the people that were dancing that ancient meat puppet around for 4 years, they threw our borders open. They swept in an invasion force of incredible size on top of a titanic population of illegals that were already here. You're going to try to clean that mess up, it's going to be tough. You're going to need organized enforcement. You're going to need raids. You're going to need alligator Alcatraz. You're going to need places to put all the illegals you're deporting. That is not the fault of Donald Trump or ICE or J.D. Vance or the Secretary of Homeland Security or anybody in the Trump administration. That is the fault of Joe Biden and Barack Obama. They did this to you, to us, to all of us. They caused this nightmare by waving in endless hordes of illegals. And it was authoritarian. That's another thing everybody needs to start understanding. We talk about authoritarianism. The authoritarian is not Donald Trump. The authoritarians are not the hardworking ICE agents out there trying to prosecute the law, which is their sworn duty. The authoritarians are the left-wingers and open borders maniacs who did this to us because they unilaterally decided that immigration laws don't count. They didn't repeal them. They didn't get legislation passed. They didn't campaign on that. They would have gotten destroyed. They didn't run in any elections. They never told anybody, hey, we're just going to eliminate American citizenship as a concept. Now vote for us. No, no, no. They did all this on their own by sabotaging and undermining the law and its enforcement and by providing incentives for illegals to come here. And when they came in the millions, that satisfied these people's agenda. But none of you out there listening to me, you never voted for this. You weren't consulted. You didn't authorize it. Nothing in the law authorized it. That was the act of authoritarianism. What you're seeing now is the pushback against authoritarianism. The authoritarians are the ones that put this gigantic invasion force in the United States. The heroes are the ones cleaning it up. And it's unfortunately a difficult process, but that lays at the feet of the people who created the problem, not the people trying to fix it. It's about time we started holding people accountable for what they've done to this country. And again, they didn't do it by winning an election. That would be different. If they had campaigned on open borders and won elections and formally repealed American citizenship and all of our immigration laws, and they had passed a law that said anybody who can get across the Rio Grande can stay here forever, fair enough. I think that would be very unwise, and I think there would be very, very little support among the American people for that. But if they had campaigned on that and won, then okay. That's how democracy works. Remember that? We're all supposed to love democracy and fight for it. No kings, no kings, no kings. The kings are the ones who nullified our immigration laws and created this nightmare. And now we're watching increasingly that desperate, corrupt left-wing party endorsing violence, which is also a tool of authoritarianism, to get their way. The authoritarians are the guys dropping tire spikes and shooting at federal agents. I'm John Hayward, sitting in for Alan today. We'll be right back with more of The Alan Nathan Show.
It's no surprise that people love their pets. In fact, 97% of pet owners consider them part of the family. Amazon's Jen Ray has more.
Amazon Pet Day makes caring for your pets easier than ever. The 48-hour sales event features thousands of deals with the convenience of Amazon's fast delivery. Whether you're welcoming a new puppy, upgrading essentials for a senior pet, or looking for products that pamper, there's something for everyone.
Nearly two-thirds of U.S. households have a pet. That's 86.9 million homes.
With so many households having pets, Amazon has something for every pet owner and their furry friends, from trusted basics to exciting new favorites across price points. Plus, Amazon is expanding its pet care offerings, now providing prescription pet medications on Amazon.com through VetSource, a leading pet pharmacy.
On May 13th and 14th, Amazon Pet Day will offer incredible deals, including on our most popular and pet-approved brands, like Purina Pro Plan, Iams, PetSafe, O'Norman, Ring, and more. Learn more at Amazon.com/Pet Day. As the school year winds down, many high school students are thinking ahead to what comes next. For some, that means staying academically engaged over the summer and preparing for the transition to college. Shauna Thayer, CEO of the online education platform Sophia Learning, has more.
Sophia Learning offers college-level courses that students can take at their own pace and are designed to transfer for credit. This summer, we're giving eligible rising high school juniors and seniors free access to 6 college-level courses. It's a great way for students to get a head start, see what college classes are really like, or try something new without the pressure.
A new survey finds that 72% of high school juniors and seniors who plan to attend college in the next 2 years feel they need to go to college to be successful, but 51% want more time to decide on a major.
Preparing for college is exciting, but can come with uncertainty. This program gives students a chance to learn at their own pace, gain confidence, and make informed choices about their future.
Learn more at sophia.org. That's Sophia with a PH.org.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey. We're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at PVA.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor at Breitbart News. Left-wing celebrities are seeking to exploit the tragic flooding in Texas to push the global warming narrative. I believe Barbara Streisand was the latest one to come out and say these floods prove there's global warming and everybody who denies it is a monster. And what we obviously need is more money spent immediately. As usual, the climate activists are happy to confuse weather with climate whenever it meets their needs. But the real story is quite a bit more complex than that. Here with us to talk about it is a real scientist, Gregory Wrightstone, geologist and the executive director of the CO2 Coalition in Arlington, Virginia, and author of A Very Convenient Warming, How Modest Warming and More CO2 Are Benefiting Humanity. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
Oh, good to be on with you. Yeah, we got to get the truth out there about these Texas floods. It's disgusting. The people like Barbara Streisand, national propaganda radio, ProPublica and others, they're just claiming that, see, climate change. And everything that you see that's somewhat unusual is tied to climate change. If it's too hot, climate change, too cold, climate change, too much rain, not enough rain, you name it. And it's all to generate this climate of fear in order for them to propose and do this net zero that they're trying to push to prevent a non-existent climate crisis. What we see is where the flood happens. It occurred in a place where that's known as Flash Flood Alley. It's the escarpment that's in West Texas from the low-lying Gulf Coast plain. It rises some 500 feet pretty quickly, and you get these warm, moist, these flash floods are known to occur there. This was a really bad one. Not the worst that we've seen over the last 150 years. There were a couple that were actually higher than this, but you won't hear that from Barbara Streisand or NPR. And so what we see here, go ahead.
I was going to say, one of the things that's a recurring factor in these climate exploitation stories is that because we live in the world we do today, where everybody has a cell phone, there's endless video, immediate media coverage, social media, they act like this has never happened before. But in fact, it has. And it's easy, as you say, to look at the record books and see there have been worse floods in this place before. They just didn't have 10,000 cell phone cameras recording it.
Yeah, and you tend to just remember what's happened recently, or particularly in your lifetime. Big floods like this might not occur maybe once in everyone's lifetime. Maybe their grandparents experienced something like that. They don't remember it. And if we look, I was actually coincidentally finishing up our report on climate change in Texas, and the subtitle is No Climate Crisis in the Lone Star State. And part of my analysis, I looked at flash floods. We had really good data on flash floods going back to 1996. So it's not a really long-term amount of data. We got 35 years of data. But we see that for flash floods going back to 1996, there's actually been a decrease, not an increase. And we also see lots of people claiming, for example, increasing heat waves. That's a standard, that high temperatures are increasing in Texas and across the United States. And we took a look at the NOAA data going back to 1895. That's National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration. This is government data. And we showed that the maximum daily temperature, average maximum daily temperatures have been decreasing for the last 130 so years. We looked at the number of days. The percentage of days in Texas that were above 100 degrees is declining since 1895. This is long-term data, good data. And so it flies in the face of these claims that they're making. And we see that it's not just Texas. We're looking at across the United States and around the world. May I dare say that they're lying to your listeners? They are. These are climate change lies that you're being told. It's scientific malfeasance. I'm a scientist, and I'm going to call them out. It's disinformation, misinformation, malinformation that's being spread in order for them to impose this climate agenda. And now, thankfully, the last 6 months, with the Trump administration, Lee Zeldin at EPA, Chris Wright at Energy, Doug Burgum at Department of Energy and more, or Interior, they're rolling back these regulations that have been imposed. And these regulations, I just bear with me when I tell you I'm pro-choice. I'm really, really strongly pro-choice. And by that, I mean, I want your listeners to have the choice of what kind of car to buy, how to heat their home, what temperature to heat or cool their home. That should be their choice. It shouldn't be up to the government. And these regulations, what they've done is they're restricting. Right now, whoever's listening, look around where you're sitting, probably in an office, air conditioned, or in your home. Everything that runs on electricity, virtually everything you're looking at, is now under government regulation. And so what you're limited, your choice is limited. And what you are offered is more expensive. And this all because of they're trying to solve a non-existent climate crisis. And what they're doing, and it's all imposing taxes and increasing expenses. And just yesterday, Donald Trump signed a new executive order rolling back subsidies for for wind and solar subsidies that were in the Orwellian named Inflation Reduction Act. Thankfully, a little birdie that I know whispered in my ear yesterday, there are more executive orders to come, perhaps even yet today, rolling back these subsidies. We shouldn't spend one penny, not one red cent, to try and solve a non-existent problem.
One of the reasons climate change is such a beloved religion among statist politicians is that if you're a member in good standing of the cult, climate change ideology will forgive you for everything you do. It's just not even discussed. And we see that with the floods, with some local government decisions that might have made them worse. We saw it in a big way with the wildfires in Los Angeles and in Canada, Canadian wildfires, which are getting blamed on climate change when it's actually stupid Canadian logging policies that actually cause all of these cataclysms. Climate change is your get out of jail free ticket if you're a believer and a politician.
Well, and you can absolve your sins by buying carbon credits. If you're going to be flying a private jet, carbon credits. Now you can virtue signal by doing that. It's crazy. This is all changing though. There's a new sheriff and his new deputies in town, and things are changing rapidly. I just see it every day. I tell somebody we are winning. And by that, I mean we're actually getting the truth out about what's happening with climate change. And the truth is the combination of modest warming, it's warmed about 1.2 degrees since 1800. That's not too alarming to me. Modest warming and more CO2 are having huge beneficial effects on our ecosystems from the near polar regions to the equator, and that's benefiting humanity. The human condition's improving because of warming and more CO2. And it's just completely opposite of what you're being told.
The real costs of what the climate change movement wants to do have become impossible to conceal, which is the other reason they're in trouble. It was possible to pretend for a while that we could just throw up some solar panels and drive electric cars here and there, and we'd be fine. Now they're being honest that it's going to cost, as you say, trillions of dollars. I'll give you the last word.
Sleep well. There is no climate crisis. Learn more at CO2Coalition.org.
Gregory Wrightstone, geologist and the executive director of the CO2 Coalition and author of A Very Convenient Warming, How Modest Warming and More CO2 Are Benefiting Humanity. Thanks for joining us today. I'm John Hayward, sitting in for Alan. We'll be right back with more of The Alan Nathan Show.
Summer can be a nonstop sprint for busy families. Between camps, road trips, and backyard barbecues, meals and snacks need to be quick, convenient, and kid-friendly. Lifestyle expert Yvette Rios has tips from the dairy aisle.
June is National Dairy Month, and dairy is a summertime lifesaver. So whether it's string cheese in a cooler, yogurt cups on the go, or even cottage cheese, these grab-and-go staples fuel kids without slowing parents down. Refrigerated doughs are another smart pick.
According to new research from the National Frozen and Refrigerated Foods Association, 77% of parents turn to dairy for convenient, kid-friendly summer solutions.
There are so many simple ways to build out a meal with dairy. Pasta salads with shredded cheese, veggie trays with ranch or sour cream dips, cottage cheese bowls topped with fruit and eggs for easy breakfast or protein-packed snacks.
To get more meal ideas and snack inspiration, visit easyhomemeals.com. That's easyhomemeals.com.
It's a well-known fact that guys often skip the doctor when they're sick and delay important health screenings. During Men's Health Month in June, encourage the men in your life to break that bad habit and take charge of their health. Vince Dorsey, a pharmacist and director of medical communications at Esperion Therapeutics, says a great way to start is with a cholesterol test.
The best defense is a good offense. High cholesterol has no symptoms. That's why it's called the silent killer. Don't put it off. Get your cholesterol tested and know your family's health history. You may not realize it, but high cholesterol can be an inherited genetic condition, putting otherwise healthy people, even in their 20s, at risk for heart disease. If you have high LDL or bad cholesterol, it is best to address this as soon as possible. There are ways to lower these levels, reducing your risk of heart attack or stroke.
If you or someone you love has high LDL cholesterol, your doctor may recommend lifestyle changes and medication to keep it in check. Visit heart.org to learn more.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
This forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, don't tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor at Breitbart News. A judge in Massachusetts is attempting to put a temporary restraining order on an appropriation law duly passed by Congress that would strip funding from Planned Parenthood. This judge is, in essence, usurping the entire United States government and saying that she's going to decide whether Planned Parenthood gets funded, not you stupid polls and your votes and your elected representatives in your constitution. Is this the Rubicon for judicial activism, the moment when something finally has to be done? Here with us to talk about it is Michael O'Neill, Vice President of Legal Affairs at Landmark Legal Foundation. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
It's good to be with you, John. Yeah, that's well described. I mean, the Rubicon is, if you'd asked me last week, would there ever be a challenge to congressional appropriations and a judicial challenge in the court, and then a temporary restraining order issued in this capacity, I would have said there's no way that could ever survive anything. Absolutely not. And yet, here we are today.
And in some ways, I think this was inevitable because the judicial activism is an organized insurrection against the U.S. system. There's no doubt about it. And it had to happen. Eventually, a judge, an imperial judge, had to try issuing a diktat that would transcend the entire U.S. legal system and dare the government to ignore the ruling. And that's what they want. They want the Trump administration to ignore the ruling, which he's never done to date. He's always fought him in court.
Right.
They want them to ignore the ruling, and then they can say, ha, Trump's a lawless Hitler, blah, blah, blah. That's what this is.
Absolutely. And what this is, interestingly, this is an escalation, because this isn't just infringing on the power of the presidency, the Article II power of the presidency. This is infringing on the Article I power of Congress. This is an escalation. This is stating that Congress, exercising its Article I power to determine how American tax dollars are being spent, that is within the realm of a judicial the capacity of a judge to remedy this in some manner. And let's look exactly at what this judge ordered. The judge said that funding, the defunding of Planned Parenthood that occurred in the Big Beautiful Bill was improper, was, I guess on the surface, she issued a two-page ruling. You don't even get a glimmer into the rationale proposed. But I guess this is what the Planned Parenthood alleged. They alleged that it constituted an unlawful bill of attainder. And then give me a break. Are you kidding me? So the judge is saying that Health and Human Services, you need to return funding, even though you have a law passed by Congress, signed by the president, saying, no, the appropriation is no longer to extend to Planned Parenthood. This is a gross abuse of judicial authority.
It also seems like a declaration of war on the very concept of representative government. This is a ruling that says this organization has powers that transcend the Constitution, and you're going to fund it forever, whether you like it or not, and no matter who you vote for, and no matter how many elections you win. That is a recipe for absolute disaster. I don't think the people pushing this understand what they're pushing the American people into by telling them that your entire system is now null and void.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, to think that this is clearly a non-justiciable issue. This is an issue that's outside the purview of the courts to determine. This is a purely political decision. And again, this is a core Article I function of Congress. And I can't emphasize that enough. One of the number one job they have is to determine how our tax dollars are spent. And that's through a negotiated process. We all saw how the sausage was made with the Big Beautiful Bill. There was compromises, and that's how the system should work. It's not a judge, a lone district court judge, cannot jump into the process after the fact and say, no, the agreement that was signed by the president, enacted as a law, and again, this is an appropriations, this isn't a constitution, this isn't an Obamacare issue, this is simply an appropriations bill, a core Article I power of Congress. No, I'm going to override that. And I'm going to say you have to restore funding to Planned Parenthood, essentially saying that Planned Parenthood has a right to taxpayer dollars. Is that what it boils down to? Certainly not.
I remember in times gone by, there was a lot of concern about an imperial judiciary, but usually the people talking about that meant the Supreme Court, and they thought the Supreme Court had essentially become a legislature unto itself. I don't think even the people writing books about imperial judiciary 20, 30 years ago thought it was going to be some lone whack job in a district court deciding they can just overrule the entire American system with a wave of their kingly hand.
Right. And I don't even know the remedy that this judge is relying on. Traditionally, there has to be some sort of equitable remedy, equitable authority that a court has. I don't know where this authority derives from. And we're talking about origins of this stuff and power, where this power comes from. I don't even know what rationale would be proffered that the judge could rely on to say, I have this some more authority, other than, as you said, John, just conjuring it out of the air because you don't agree with the policy decision made by Congress. And again, a political decision, because you disagree with a political decision made by Congress, you're going to exercise your authority as a lone district court judge to try to remedy that. Again, beyond the pale. And as you're right, I couldn't have contemplated this. But again, you see the escalation here. You see that judges weren't content with simply, in their mind, curbing the power of the executive. Now they're having to intrude on the powers of Congress.
I have a hard time believing anybody who was serious about, let's say, the No Kings protests. You know, a lot of that's just hyperbole and hypocrisy and chanting. But if you really seriously are opposed to being ruled by authoritarians or monarchs or whatever, how can you think it's a good idea to have lone unelected judges writing national legislation? That's the closest we could possibly get to an old-fashioned monarchy in this country.
Certainly, and this is a lone decision. And we thought you ostensibly you try to think that this is behind you as an attorney. Okay, Supreme Court ruled in Trump versus Casa that universal injunctions are improper. A district court doesn't have that power to issue universal injunctions. And in between the lines of that, if you read the case carefully, you see that there's a very strong recitation of the history of equitable powers of courts, and you can discern. And judges should be able to do this. Discern, hey. Let me roll back. Let me throttle back some of these rulings I'm making. Maybe I am standing outside my Article III authority. Maybe I am exercising powers beyond my constitutional capacity. But apparently the message wasn't heard. Now again, the Supreme Court is trying to do. Let's give credit where credit is due. In a lot of these instances, you just saw a couple days ago with regard to the presidential personnel decision regarding proffering that plan about how to terminate employment in certain executive capacity. That the president has that authority. You saw an 8-1 decision there, even Justices Kagan and Sotomayor joined on that. Of course, you saw Trump versus Casa. You're seeing other instances where these cases are going to the Supreme Court, and the court is affirming the separation of powers doctrine to a large extent. But again, the Supreme Court's only, there are only 9 justices up there. They can only do so much. And the fact that we, those who believe in separation of powers and believe in constitutional government, have to fight to get, and the government, not nonetheless the Trump administration, has to fight to get every single one of these cases in front of the Supreme Court to achieve the proper outcome is incredible. You should have to rely on the appellate courts and the circuit, the district courts, and then the appellate courts, the circuit courts, to make the right decisions. But apparently that's not the case.
You know, mostly in a case like this, in this particular instance, this is a situation that our system nicely handles. If a particular administration wants to cut funding to an organization and the people really want that funding restored, well, you can just vote for people that'll restore it and you win the next election and the funding comes back. But it certainly seems to me like Planned Parenthood and the left does not think they would win that political argument. They keep telling us how popular abortion on demand is and how everybody thinks Planned Parenthood is a sainted organization, but they do not seem at all confident that their ability to win an election and restore all that funding.
Certainly not. And again, I think if you put that as a political question, I think if you put that to the American people, it would be one of those 80-20, 90-10 issues. Do you think American tax dollars, do you think your tax dollars should go to fund abortions? Planned Parenthood is going to make the argument that it doesn't fund that contributions and that that their funds, the taxpayer funds that they receive don't fund abortions. But we know that it's all fungible. Every dollar that Planned Parenthood could use for tax dollars for mammograms or health screenings for women is one less dollar that they have to fund abortions. So we know that this is all fungible. We know that this money is being used interchangeably to fund abortions. I think the American people clearly agree with this, as indicated in the political process. Look, a majority of Congress, both houses, agreed to cut funding. Now, again, it was just for 1 year. It wasn't permanent. I'd like to see it permanent going forward from a political standpoint. But clearly a majority of the Congress agreed with this, said no taxpayer money should go to Planned Parenthood. And yet you have a judge stepping into this process saying, no, 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 HHS, you have to continue to fund it in defiance of a law. So HHS is saying, okay, do I comply with the law passed by Congress and signed by the president, or do I comply with this temporary restraining order by the judge? I think you see where that, I know what I'd do if I were in HHS.
Well, for all the caterwauling about Trump supposedly being a monarch or whatever, his administration has been very patient about working all of these usurpations through the courts. They always do it right. Absolutely. Are they going to let this one play out slowly and carefully and take it all the way to the Supreme Court?
Yeah, that's an interesting case. I think you would want to see this immediately appealed. And I don't think, honestly, I know I've been saying circuit courts. I don't see a circuit court affirming this decision. Right now, they're haggling about when the next hearing is going to be whether it's going to be on the 21st. So procedurally, it's kind of in flux right now. But I got to believe, John, that the First Circuit is not going to affirm this decision. Also, another remedy here is this judge has clearly indicated that she lacks objectivity in this case. And I think the chief judge of her court can reassign this case. There is that remedy. And also, what is the ultimate remedy here? And this is the power of Congress. And again, I'm loath to go down this road because I don't like to weaponize it or quote-unquote politicize it. But Congress does have the power to impeach these judges.
Yeah, that's the real question. I mean, the short answer to why do judges keep doing this is because they can. And there's really no repercussions. If they try and fail, they just shrug and they try again. And maybe it's about time, some people think, for these judges to face repercussions for abusing their authority. We shall see how this one plays out. Michael O'Neill, Vice President of Legal Affairs at Landmark Legal Foundation. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News, sitting in for Alan today. We'll be right back with more of the Alan Nathan Show.
Planning a summer road trip? You're not alone. Over 75% of Americans are hitting the road this season. But before you pack the snacks and playlists, make sure your car and your car insurance are road trip ready. Start with a full vehicle checkup. Brakes, oil, tires, wipers. Pack an emergency kit. Learn how to change a tire and bring a backup map because GPS is not always reliable out there. Understanding your coverage is important as well. Although many people think they understand their insurance, a recent survey found 96% of drivers misunderstood at least one part of their policy. And that's where the General can help. With our app, you can review your policy, file a claim fast, or get a quote in 2 minutes or less. At the General, our mission is to give people a break when they need it most. And that's why we've made managing your car insurance easier, faster, and smoother, so you can stay focused on the road ahead. Planning a trip? Visit thegeneral.com so you can hit the road with confidence.
With the cost of living rising dramatically, budgets are tight and customers are looking for ways to stretch their dollars. T-Mobile has launched two new experience plans, adding industry-leading value and savings, plus a 5-year price guarantee, so customers can rest assured that the price of their talk, text, and data stays the same. The Experience Beyond plan includes over $200 in added value for every line every month, with satellite connectivity, yearly device upgrades, and an entertainment streaming bundle that includes Apple TV+, Hulu, Netflix, and more. For more information, visit T-Mobile.com, sponsored by T-Mobile.
National Iced Tea Day is just around the corner, and it's the perfect time to celebrate everyone's favorite summertime beverage. As a tea sommelier, I'm always looking for tea products with high-quality ingredients that are sourced responsibly. When it comes to a bottled tea, my go-to is Tea Java. It's brewed in small batches using quality tea leaves from Java, Indonesia. No sugar, no calories, and no added preservatives. Just a refreshing, authentic tea like I brewed it myself. Tea Java is a must-have this summer. You can learn more at teajava.com.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm going to keep ticking. But no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times, when we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while? Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart and don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. For help keeping yours at a healthy range, text PRESSURE to 97779. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries. From healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all got to help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're going to be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor at Breitbart News. Hollywood is hopping mad about artificial intelligence programs stealing their content and using it to generate AI programs. But there are some who think Hollywood is going a little too far here, and that if we don't provide AI development with enough raw materials to work with, we will inevitably lose leadership in the AI race to China. Here with us to talk about it is Dr. Rebecca Grant, President of Iris Independent Research and Vice President of the Lexington Institute. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
Great to be talking with you.
This is an old fear about AI that dates back to the earliest years I remember writing about it over a decade ago now, when early pioneers of the tech said China was going to have a huge advantage because they don't have any concept of privacy rights. They can use their entire gigantic population to feed data into their AI, and they'll happily steal data from all around the world to pump into their AI programs. And the quality of your AI is largely dependent on what material you can feed into it. So it was said that we were always destined to lose this race with them.
Well, not destined to lose, I hope, but you really do point out the problem, which is that China has no hesitation in stealing our data, and they have no hesitation in using data to train their AI models. And, you know, it turns out that to do a good generative AI model that we're all seeing so much more of, you really need a lot of fiction and kind of a really broad scope of written work to train up these models. And so that's why these two California cases were just made such a splash in Hollywood. I mean, the Hollywood Reporter is saying, you know, this is really bad news for the movie studios and it's going to be the end, where really what it means is the copyright law, which goes back to the U.S. Constitution, if you can believe it. You know, it was applied and the judges said, hey, this is a transformative use. And you can go ahead and train your AI models as long as you've purchased the book before you feed it to the model.
It's amazing how far this technology has come so quickly, and you can see why Hollywood is antsy, because it's already possible for average people with no particular training or expensive resources to fire up an AI model and generate short films and so on out of thin air using almost anything they can imagine. And if that technology continues to improve, then who needs to pay actors and directors a fortune?
Right. I know that's the concern. And yet, if it was that easy, right, you know, if it was that easy, Hollywood would only make good movies that were blockbusters, right, if it was that easy. You know, I think one of the most interesting cases here with talking about what's right to do and not to is actually one that the Hollywood Reporter used. They put up a big image of Darth Vader, and we all remember Spaceballs, the Mel Brooks spoof that's about to get a reboot, actually, where he took all the characters from Star Wars and made them really funny and did the movie Spaceballs. And you know why that wasn't a copyright infringement? Was because it was so transformative. He'd really put them in a different setting, and then he'd used parody. And so that's long been recognized as a concept that's okay. So what we saw here really was a select group of Hollywood types saying they didn't want their book used for an AI model. Well, you know, I got to tell you, it's time to consider national security here, because we really need our leading edge innovators to stay ahead of China. And we don't have a big lead like we used to in the Cold War back in the day. Our lead is measured in months over China. And that's why we need to keep the innovators going and let them train on the best data that's available.
You know who saw this coming? Michael Crichton. And saw all this coming decades ago. He wrote a book back in the late 70s, I think, that was made into a movie called Looker. And the entire premise of the book was that computer graphics had become able to duplicate people, and so they didn't need actors anymore. And that he entirely knew this problem was coming from such an early day. He was such a visionary. And here we are with this very concept of intellectual property being used in a way that the creators are not happy with, because it's allowing people to do things that previously had a pretty high bar to entry. You can't really just make a movie, even if you're a guerrilla filmmaker. It still takes resources and time. But increasingly, AI is getting us to the point where that won't be true. And as you say, if the response to that is to lock content down, then our next generation AI models will not be as well nourished as those produced by competitors like China.
Exactly. And then what would happen? We would have China dominating that global marketplace. And that is really what we have to avoid. You know, China's goal is to take over major industrial sectors. We've seen that happen, talking about shipbuilding, solar panels, you know, you name it. We don't want to see that dominance in AI, because then not only does that affect, you know, the creative the struggles and our entertainment, but it affects anything we do in the AI realm, whether that's applying AI to healthcare, applying it to solving military problems, or just anything at all. If China gets ahead and then gains global market share and our U.S. AI innovators drop behind, then we live in a world where it's Marx and Lenin and China's Xi Jinping thought training all of our next round of data. And wow, we don't want that to happen. It's why we've really got to guard this edge. And frankly, you know, we need that entire Western and American canon and Michael Crichton and everyone else to ensure that the best models are the U.S. models. A lot of them, of course, open source and available for many other innovators to use.
And at this point in the evolution of AI, one of the problems is that the only way to improve the models further is to fill them with data and watch them operate and see where they fall down and where they don't do well, and then create superior iterations. So these things are essentially gestated now, not built. And the next wave of AI is going to be built on the results of this wave. And that's, I think, the fear, where people like China that have vast troves of data and no compunctions about using it are going to be able to iterate and improve their artificial intelligence much faster than we can if we don't feed them enough data to nourish them.
Right. And we know what China wants to do with that. And you know, our White House AI czar, David Sachs, was really happy to see these rulings, because he says, you know, China is going to train on all the data regardless of U.S. copyright. And so the fair use is essential for the U.S. to win the AI race. And there's a lot of connection now. You know, our military programs are really starting to tap into AI to do everything from speed up shipbuilding, industrial processes, to looking at sensors and intelligence and targeting in the battle space. All that is really starting to tap into AI, and we want to have the best available there to, you know, keep our national security edge. We're not used to talking about national security as a criterion in all the AI rules and regulations, but it's time that national security had a voice.
And absolutely, because you need artificial intelligence to design and execute weapons platforms faster than humans could, and to coordinate autonomous weapons in the field. I'll give you the last word.
That's right. And the U.S. has to win this AI race with China. We need the electricity. We need the models. We need the free and open U.S. business system to go get them.
And you only have to look at the conflict in Ukraine to see how fast drone war is evolving almost in real time, and how important it is to have the right computers operating those drones. Dr. Rebecca Grant, president of Iris Independent Research and vice president of the Lexington Institute, thanks for joining us today. I'm John Hayward, deputy national security editor of Breitbart News. Thanks for joining us on this hour of the Alan Nathan Show.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com.